Well, really, the biggest pushback is there's a lot of generational inertia against change in building materials. Mm-hmm. They've done it a certain way, and it works. And
yeah,
there's a lot of cost to change that industry and infrastructure. So
yeah,
the pushback is A, who are you? Which is a fair question. But yeah. B, it's why?
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Hello, hello, we're live, and thank you very much for joining. Sean, I'm so glad to have you on and excited for an update about what you have going. But before we do, I want to give a real quick shout out to all of our sponsors and say thank you so much for everything that you've done. Westtown Bank, IND Hemp, Formation Ag, Almco. There's a whole bunch more. FiberX just came on as a fabulous sponsor for our seed trial. So thank you guys so much for everything that you're doing. For those that are not connected with them, please reach out. I'll actually run their names down at the bottom of the screen here in just a minute. But reach out, and I'm happy to help connect. They're fabulous support for the industry, and just want to give them a quick shout out. Okay, so before I get to talking too much, Sean, I'd love to turn this over and hear a little bit. For those that don't know you, we want to give a quick background about who you are, what you've been working on before we transition into what you've got your hands in now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, Mandy, thanks again for having me. It's a pleasure to be on this platform, and it's awesome to see your growth in this industry over the years. And honestly,
okay, you've been with us from the beginning, so thank you so much. It's pretty awesome.
I mean, honestly, there needs to be about 20 more yous in the hemp industry, but I digress. My journey is really starts from when the pandemic hit. I was looking at, you know, what problems need solving in our society. And I began, obviously, I've known about hemp for a long time, and I've been very interested in it. And I'd started US Hemp Company in 2020, and I was initially looking to get into the paper side, paper disruption. The unfortunate thing is after doing lots of industry research and speaking with manufacturing folks on the paper pulp side, the capital expenses were just too much. That plus the industrial hemp crop plantings nationwide weren't conducive for a large enough supply chain to justify going that direction. So after a lot of back and forth, and, you know, again, going back to what problems need solving, I came back to building materials and the carbon footprint, both in the manufacturing of building materials and in the what's called embedded carbon of building materials once they're put into place. And, you know, I kept thinking, you know, what is something that is so ubiquitous but is necessary that our society is built on, and that's concrete. And with US Hemp Company, I was very keen to look at hempcrete and see what kind of opportunities that could bring. And I am still in a tertiary aspect interested in that, but circling back to the crop plantings, there needs to be about 1 million+ acres of hemp, industrial hemp specifically, being planted for large enough supply chains for hempcrete nationwide to justify the capital expenditure. So in doing research, I figured that there's got to be a way in the concrete process itself where there's opportunities for disruption. And that's where I came up with NanoCrete. And that's where we are today, is we're working on converting waste plastics, liberating the hydrocarbons within waste plastics into their solid carbon constituents, which is graphite, which is the 3D version of carbon in a 3D configuration, I should say, and then graphene in a two-dimensional configuration of carbon atoms, that in a solid, basically powder mixture implemented into concrete produces a stronger concrete and a more water-resistant concrete, which makes it more durable and last longer.
So you're taking plastic waste and turning it into graphene or the carbon?
Graphene and graphite, yes, ma'am. We're looking at all forms of waste plastics because I'm sure you're aware the plastic recycling rates in this country are abysmally low. I mean, Reuters has it at 5% of all plastics were recycled in this country in 2021. And the other 95%, they're either going into landfills or they're going at some point into the waterways and into the oceans.
Okay, so help paint a picture, right? For those that are pretty disconnected or removed, maybe have lived in Utah their whole lives or not been to the ocean or to a third world country where these, you know, piles and mountains of plastic are piling up. Can you talk a little bit about like what's the impact we have or how is this very quickly or already impacting us?
Yeah, sure. So for really many decades, we in the rich world simply offloaded the problem. We shipped it to China, we shipped it to Indonesia. And then a few years ago, China said, you know what, we're done. We're not taking your trash anymore. You guys have to figure out what to do with it.
Right.
Which we haven't really figured out what to do with it. You know, there's a lot of back and forth between, you know, who's to blame for the plastics problem, but playing a blame game doesn't solve any problems. Really, what needs to happen is finding solutions that are, create economic value. Because a lot of plastic solutions, in quotes, that you see, they're really low to no economic value creation with the waste, which long term, that doesn't solve the problem. It just ensures that maybe 10% get recycled as opposed to getting that that number needle to 50, 75% recycled.
Sure, sure. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about the process. I'm taken back by the ability to turn. I understand turning like a hemp into graphene because of its carbon, you know, backbone. But talk to me a little bit about plastics to a carbon backbone, graphite or graphene, and how does this then benefit the concrete space and the carbon footprint? Talk to me through this cycle. It's a lot to wrap my head around.
You know, it really is. And I will just tell the audience here that I'm not a chemist or scientist myself. So if I can figure it out, then everybody can figure it out. So I will do my very best to try and explain it here in simple terms. So plastics, whether they're, you know, the bags or the cups, they have their own little triangle recycle code. And currently the only plastic that is massively recycled and even has an infrastructure for recycling is the, with the one PET, that's like bottle caps and certain plastic bottles, but it's a very small percentage of all plastics. What we are doing is we are using pyrolysis and eventually microwave pyrolysis, to create what's called an endothermic reaction inside the waste plastic. I mean, we're blasting the hydrocarbon structure of plastics and then breaking that apart. And then we're taking just the carbon itself. The rest of that turns into acetylene waste gas and syngas, which we then are going to, because you can exactly capture, and we're going to reuse it so that it'll make it a closed loop system. So we'll have as few energy inputs from external energy sources as possible.
Yeah.
And then how that benefits concrete is there are several studies that show that when you implement graphite and graphene as a certain percentage of your cement into concrete, you're going to increase the both the tensile and the compressive strength by between 15 to 30%.
Oh, wow.
And also reduce the amount of water needed to cure while creating a water permeable or a barrier to prevent water from entering and seeping in, which if you've got rebar, that's going to cause corrosion. So really this acts as like a paste, if you will, that strengthens and also repels.
Okay. Okay. So, and then talk to me about the carbon value. Right. Then where does the carbon play come in, especially as carbon trade has become so such a common, you know, common conversation or topic of conversation?
So really where the synergy of all of this comes into with carbon credits and carbon removal purchase agreements is our value proposition is we're going to come to corporations and say that we are able to and demonstrate that we're able to bring the cost of carbon sequestration down for per dollar. Because currently sequestration methods are between $300 to $600 per ton of carbon. And I don't, some of your viewers will know that the UN and IPCC has determined that $100 per ton for carbon removal is kind of like the golden number for there to be a more circular economy globally. So we're, our value proposition with NanoCrete is we're coming to corporations looking to meet their emissions targets by able to help them sequester more carbon per dollar. Our target is between $150 to $200 per ton sequestration.
Okay. I don't know if I understand this completely, but I want to talk a little bit before we dive into to my question specifically about the credit, you know, how is that earned or given? But I want to talk about the carbon footprint. Like, why'd you pick concrete? You know, why so this industry?
Concrete is, it's intensively greenhouse gas emission. It's a gross emitter, bluntly. Every cubic yard of concrete produced emits 400 pounds of CO2 into the atmosphere. So to give you a little perspective, if you have a two-car garage, that driveway, that is over 1.5 tons of CO2 emissions equivalent, that one driveway of concrete.
Wow. Okay.
And globally, every 60 seconds, concrete production emits over 150 kilograms of CO2 into the atmosphere.
Okay. I don't even know how to wrap my head around this, right? What does that mean on a global perspective or industry-wide?
So concrete production itself is 8% of total global emissions annually. So if it were a country, we're talking below the US, but above, you know, pretty on par with like France or Germany in terms of total emissions.
One industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's the production of it. That doesn't include the transportation of materials, the breaking down and deconstruction of old buildings. And this is, you know, I've been working and researching the Portland Cement Association. Their guide to carbon neutrality by 2050 for the entirety of the cement chain and concrete chain in the United States. This problem that I'm solving or looking to solve is a very small portion of even concrete production. There's the trucks, there's the batch plant facilities, there's the Portland cement production itself. I want to be clear, we're not coming in and saying that we're removing Portland cement from the equation entirely. But if you can remove 10% of Portland cement from every given concrete mixture, that in aggregate really adds up to a lot of CO2 emission reductions.
Man, not to mention the solution of removing the plastic pollution, right? I think that this is a piece that when we look at the value, the entire life cycle analysis and where it's coming from. Okay, so we talk about credits, right? How and credits being assigned and value of credits. Can you speak a little bit to how that credit is earned or given or tracked? And then also, you know, what is the avenue if, you know, I as a company want to purchase credits or sell credits? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, good question. So the outlets that we're looking at right now, there's one called Frontier Climate. And it's kind of a, how do I phrase this? It's like a pre-market conglomeration of corporations. So like Shopify, Alphabet, Goldman Sachs, and a couple of other companies have basically put money into this pool. And what this pool does is they help startups and other companies in the carbon sequestration and removal stage by assigning certain tranches, if you will. So like $1 million tranche here, $1 million tranche here. And then us as a corporation can come in and basically build our own tranche and our own product of sequestration that we then market through these outlets like Frontier Climate. Another one is Puro.earth. In America, since it's not federally regulated, we're having to look at private markets and basically pick up our bootstraps as private companies and banks to define carbon sequestration, to quantify it, and to be able to monitor it long term. To your point, there's several different basically carbon accounting methods out there. And kind of the, I know you've spoken with this with Julie Lerner over at Panex Exchange. There's a need to have one or maybe even two standardized carbon tracking methods throughout the entire industrial sector, whether it's concrete, steel production, gasoline production, for example. There needs to be standardized metrics that every person can like go to a .gov website and see this company claims that they are meeting their emissions targets through these avenues, and well, here it is. And why I chose concrete, that's about as tangible a method of sequestration as you can get. So the carbon that we're taking from waste plastics and putting it into concrete is sequestered permanently into that concrete.
Right. And okay, so then talk to me a little bit about the time, right? How is, and this maybe you know or don't know, but I'm curious, you know, as product carbon is being locked up in different products for extended period of time, like concrete for say 100 years, how long compared to a shirt, right? Where somebody may earn a carbon credit for using hemp or something like that. How is that being evaluated, right? Do you know the time it's locked up?
Short answer, I don't. But to your point, I'm of the same mindset where there should be a higher
value
dollar credit exactly for something that is more long-term. And, you know, to your point about tracking, my biggest gripe with the most popular method of carbon credits, which is forest planting, is there's a lot of abuse in that program. There's a lot of, couple of the wildfires in Europe this summer were started because of companies planting forests for carbon credits, but doing it improperly. So there's got to be a objective manner of quantifying, well, like this is organic carbon that we're sequestering in like forests or t-shirts. And then there's inorganic carbon that we're sequestering in different building materials like concrete or fiberglass or a really high density plastic for like a wind turbine. So I'm with you there. There needs to be more clarification and less jockeying between. I feel like there's a lot of investor companies and VC funds that are jockeying to be the carbon folks. Exactly. And they're trying to be
a topic of conversation, right? But there's still a lot of uncertainty that I hear of, like, how do you get your product certified? You know, who's certifying? And then how do you engage in the purchase of them? Right. And so, yeah, there's definitely this still a lot of uncertainty. And I do give, you know, Julie and her team, in fact, huge shout out to Seth. I saw him this last weekend, and just the work that they're doing, the knowledge they have on their team for the carbon trade is really impressive. And so, yeah, what you said. And I saw Michelle. Thank you so much for chiming in, Michelle. It's good to see you. Oh, I need to find her comment. I can't find my mouse to pull it up on screen, but she said, kudos for working to tackle the enormity of the concrete issues, because this is a big industry, right? And I'm curious from you, what pushback have you gotten as you've you know, moved into this industry and really, really transitioned from, you know, the paper and packaging into concrete?
Well, really the biggest pushback is there's a lot of generational inertia against change in building materials. Mm-hmm. They've done it a certain way and it works. And
yeah,
there's a lot of cost to change that industry and infrastructure. So
yeah,
the pushback is A, who are you? Which is a fair question. But yeah. B, it's why don't the big companies do this themselves? And the reason why is there's not, I guess, the focus on their part and the value on their part, because again, if they have to spend $10 million to in the next 10 years recover another $100 million as opposed to just, you know, doing 5% investments per quarter in your infrastructure, doing business as is, then people will take the path of least resistance. That's just human nature. So if we're able to kind of nudge the concrete industry, but do it in the form of a startup that's gaining a lot of, you know, public traction, and this is a very visceral and tangible and real topic. I mean, it's not carbon credits that's out in the ether. Like that's hard to really grasp. But when we're talking building materials and housing, I mean, that's something that emotionally strikes people. And this is really the crux of it all, is we need concrete. We need to continue building. We have a housing shortage, not just in this country, but globally.
So does this, so when we talk about strengthening the concrete itself, right? What type of tests now need to be done as this is, you know, new additives are being added to concrete? What does that cycle look like and time to scale?
Yeah, good question. So really ASTM, they're kind of the go-to for certifications, because they do a lot of the strength and different blends of concrete testing, and not even just concrete. I mean, they're really across the entire building material sector. So they're the biggest ones to go after for certifications, but we are also going to be looking at LEED for green building credits certification, and UL for safety certification and human habitation certification. Because if we're able to demonstrate actual compressive and tensile strength increases, then with certification, then we can go to architects and engineers and say, we can build up and we can build more, I guess, unique and architecturally different structures while using a better concrete that lasts longer as well.
Sure. So what does scale look like for you? You know, understanding you're in, I guess, startup phase, right? And just moving this in. You know, who are some partners you're working with? You don't have to be specific about names, but maybe, you know, industries or verticals or sectors that you've approached or gone after. And then, yeah, what does scale look like?
Yeah, scale really at this point is demonstrating the final product itself and its claims in terms of strength and water resistance. And then scaling is being able to intake enough waste plastics and then being able to process it through pyrolysis and flashing at an energy efficient enough scale to where we're getting a high enough output of nanocrete dry solid mix output. So at this point, we're thinking initially it's probably going to be about 10 to 1, if you think about it, like 10 tons input for 1 ton output through production. So it's scaling is being able to make that as efficient as possible. Because, I mean, pyrolysis is not rocket surgery. It's the integration of pyrolysis with the other plastic, because you've got to shred it, you've got to clean it, you've got to sort it, you've got to do some other things before you throw it into pyrolysis. So it's integrating all of that into a modular system that you can basically plug and play, and then even if necessary, just like plug multiple units into one another. So that's the goal, is to make it a modular system. And right now, I just graduated from what's called Founder Institute. They're a pre-seed accelerator program. They're actually the largest accelerator program in the world for pre-seed founders and startups. So I'm very grateful for them and for having access to their network of mentors and advisors. So I'm very excited for the next 6 months, because my goal right now is to have a demonstrated minimum viable product by August 31st.
Very cool. Okay. So you, this month, next month, this month,
this month, it's August. It is August.
Am I in July still? August? It all just blends together. This month's crazy for me. So, okay. So, talk to me about, you know, grants, qualifying for grants, what type of partners, you know, especially along the supply chain. I did an interview the other day that was really awesome. She talked a lot about, it was with Zev, and they part of like a marketing co-op for the industry, but she gave some great advice on finding the non-obvious, you know, stakeholders. And so I'm curious from you, you know, who along this supply chain has really been crucial for your development outside of, you know, the founders group, but yeah.
Yeah. I've been in conversation with folks at other building material companies, like major ones that you would know. And they are interested in what we're doing, not only for concrete, but for, say, a fiber cement product that reduces water permeability. So there's a lot of different synergies in the building industry, building materials industry, but a non-typical partner that we're looking into potentially in the next few years is electronics and battery manufacturing, because if after testing, if we can determine the graphite that we're able to produce is of high enough quality, then that's going to be a significant value add for battery manufacturers on the anode and cathode side. So there's a lot of opportunity, but right now it's testing and it's validating. So we're excited, but we also don't want to pull the cart before the horse.
Sure. Well, I'm impressed. And there's a lot of discussion and a lot of conversation about graphene and graphite. And you're making me want to dive in and get some science and technical conversations going, because I still am confused about the process of how it becomes graphene or graphite from whether it's hemp or, you know, another byproduct or plastics. And, you know, as you run it through pyrolysis, what are you doing with that waste material? You said talk to me about that cycle again. I know you mentioned it once.
Yeah. So when you subject, and like you said, it doesn't need to be waste plastics. It can be bio waste, waste, animal waste even. But when you apply the method of pyrolysis in terms of that is called an exothermic reaction. You're applying heat outside in. What that does is it's breaking the chemical bonds between the hydrocarbons in plastics case, and in cellulose, it's breaking the cellulose down into its base carbons. Sure. And then how it gets ordered into graphite and graphene, it's a bit of fancy physics. A lot of research is coming out of Rice University for that, but it really is the application of high voltage AC current to the bio waste, the high carbon solids produced after pyrolysis. Mostly gas, waste gas like acetylene, ethylene is produced from pyrolysis about 80% actually. So the key is to have the collection of that waste gas right there on site, and then have, because some of the gas, you have to burn it off right away. You can't store it. So that portion of waste gas needs to be rerouted into the pyrolysis burner itself. That's how you get the closed loop action. But the majority of the products from pyrolysis is in fact gas and oil. Some people consider that waste. At this point, we're going to look to wholesale that out as a revenue stream. Really, we're concerned with the black good stuff, the solids.
Sure.
And then what we're in the process of figuring out now is how to test percentage graphite and graphene after the flashing process. So if it's 20% the good stuff that we want and 80% waste, we don't know yet.
Or what plastic is best for the best production, I assume, and where you're going to source that from.
Yeah, ideally, I mean, if we're able to demonstrate the recycling of waste turbines, wind turbines, I think that'll be a big value add for a lot of folks who are leery of renewable energy. We can, just for example's sake, say partner with like GE and say, you know, yes, Farmer Joe, we're putting these giant wind turbines on your land that you may not like. However, we're not going to just dump the waste here on your site afterwards. Here's how we're going to responsibly remove the plastic waste after the life of these turbines is complete. And here you go.
Cool. Okay, so Michelle had a really good question again. She said that you had mentioned the housing market crisis. What about attacking the new market such as 3D printing? I would imagine this would be an awesome additive to this application into 3D.
It's funny you mentioned that and that Michelle mentions that, because one of the other graduates of the Denver Institute is in the 3D concrete printing space. So we are very much looking at future collaboration and partnerships. So again, it's once we demonstrate viability and verification, the sky's the limit.
Awesome. What about I kind of mentioned funding sources and challenges and grants available, right? Can you talk to me about what's needed? I mean, we're coming up against, and this is probably one of the biggest competitors where hemp will really bump in, or any type of carbon-based product, right? Can add huge value, but also bump up against the industry, right? Who is very stable. You know, they've got lots of capital invested. Talk to me about what scale looks like on the capital side, and maybe your plan to acquire capital. Is it through grant money? Is it, what does it look like as far as scale goes?
Yeah. So we are looking at grants right now. There's a company, an outfit that we're partnering with to go after grants specifically. Like, they help write grants and help verify that the proposal that is being written and submitted has the highest likelihood of success. So we are in the process of that partnership and doing a grant for the EPA right now. So TBD, and stay tuned for that. But yes, short answer, grants are a great outlet. And with the newest inflation bill that was passed by the Senate, there's a lot of extra incentives packed in that for what we're trying to do. So really, there's a lot of...
What do those incentives look like? Where are you finding opportunity, especially through government funding, the most?
It's mostly going to be EPA, because that's their...
Because that's where carbon falls, and I mean, is that where they're...
Well, the grant we're working on right now is specifically related to plastics upcycling. So there's different, I mean, the grants.gov portal is just, it's vast. I don't know if any of your viewers have ever gone through it, or if you've gone through it, it's own little universe.
Yeah. It's so much, and it takes someone who's good at it to be good at it, like who's spent time in it to be efficient in it, I guess is what I should say.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, I found this firm that does this grant writing proposals and partnerships through the Founder Institute. One of the mentors has worked with them many times for his various companies. So there's a lot of grant money available, and there's going to be more so in the hemp space, ideally on the industrial side, for fiber and seed. The problem is getting that, and the government is very strict on, you know, if you don't fill out a proposal right, you'll get denied, no matter how brilliant your idea is and your proposal is. So it's best to
find someone who knows and or has had experience in it, right? Because it's worth your money and your time.
Well, exactly. And this is kind of what I circle back to is I'm not the smartest dude out there. So I need to rely on others who are much more talented and nerdy in specific areas. So my job is to get people as excited about we're removing plastics from the environment and creating an economic up value by doing so. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of positive feedback from the presentations that I've been giving. And I've actually got a pitch competition tomorrow night here in Denver called Pints and Pitches. So hopefully that goes well. It's a 6-minute presentation with pitch deck, and we shall see.
Okay. So what would you say some of the biggest opportunities are for people to get involved in this space? And if somebody is looking to get involved with you, how do they reach you?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest opportunities is begin by educating yourself. There's a lot of good information in terms of, you know, sign up to the Global Hemp Association and pay attention to the discussions that are being had, because the thing is there's 10 times more misinformation in the carbon space and in the hemp space.
Yes.
Than there are actual legitimate people and solutions. So spend time researching. And if you don't know, ask someone like Mandy or ask someone like Michelle or Julie with Pan Exchange. I mean, the good people in this space are very open and very willing to help. Exactly.
Right. As you know, and I've said this for a long time, there's a lot I don't know, but we know someone that does. And so I'd love to help connect there and, you know, direct. And I also credit. But okay, so if somebody wants to get in touch with you and get involved in your project or learn more specific about your project, you know, what is it you need and how do they reach you?
Yeah, so you can check out our website. It's just nano-crete.com. Perfect. Yeah, and right now it's me and a unofficial co-founder at the moment. And we are, as I said earlier, August 31st is the date I have sent out into the universe that we are going to put the minimum viable product out for initial testing as well as demonstration. So if
are you so excited?
I mean, it's hard to put into words. It's like, it's excited, but it's also terrifying because, this thing called entrepreneurship is not easy. And it's a very foreboding forest that we walk into, but the journey is worth it. And the problems that we are all trying to solve matter enough to do it. So I'm very grateful for the space you've given me here, and, you know, being able to share what we're trying to do and, you know, how we're trying to do it. And the more people that are excited as we are, reach out, you know, even if you just want to pick my brain and ask questions, I'm happy to chat.
I think what's so cool is you've now participated in a third party organization that has, you know, supported and believed enough in your idea to contribute, you know, continue to contribute. And I think this is something that, you know, more and more people are paying attention to and people are trying to fix. And the future generations know that in order to be sustainable, we've got to make change, and they're willing to vote with their dollar. And so I'm really excited to see the opportunity come forward for a healthier product that's going to last longer. You know, I didn't realize the problem that, you know, we had with concrete because of the moisture and rebar. And so those are things too, that I was so disconnected until I dove into conversations like this, that I was like, wait, what? You know, I thought that it just was there and lasted forever and stood up forever. And, you know, coming with a product that may potentially protect from or protecting and prevent erosion because of its, you know, water resistant. I think that's another, you know, very exciting piece that has to be really looked at. And I'm sure brings a lot of doubt for these big organizations that have been doing it this way and it's worked the whole time, right?
Yeah, well, and something I should mention that is very important to know with concrete. Once it's poured, it does absorb CO2 throughout its life cycle when exposed to the outside air. So concrete is more important as a building material than, like, say for blacktop pavement. If we're trying to cool cities down, it would make more sense to tear up a lot of blacktop street tops and replace it with higher light reflecting albedo concrete, while having it be stronger and last for maybe 15% longer lifespan than traditional concrete. So that's...
You are speaking in terms I do not understand. Because I don't understand. Like, I thought plastic was all the same. Like, oh, there's just one type of plastic. No, there's not, y'all. There's tons of concrete or asphalt, right? And the why we're using it is just... above my pay grade,
I'm
sure.
You know, it's crazy. A lot of reason, the very simple reason why a lot of things are done the way they are is just some person happened upon it and no one thought to challenge it.
I wonder, does asphalt, and this is just kind of a side conversation, but its flexibility because it isn't so rigid, like, and roads, does it need to be more pliable, removable? You know what I mean? I'm sure that there's different types of concrete for different applications because of movement also.
True. And I should also state that I've never built a road in my life, concrete or asphalt. So take whatever I say with a grain of salt. But from my understanding, there are certain applications where you need a blacktop. I'm thinking like airports, certain like high industrial traffic, roadways, but for the majority of, you know, light traffic roads in cities, that may deserve a rethink, and a recalculation on the part of city planners. So,
well, it'll be exciting because I think that not just with your product, right, but other products that are coming to the market and the disruption that we're seeing within the building and construction industry, it's exciting. And it's
really is
nerve-wracking, right? The people that are in the industry that have big operations, it's a big undertaking for them to shift to new practices, new way of building, training, education that comes alongside of it. And so it's pretty cool to be at the forefront, but understanding that, you know, we've got a long road ahead. Entrepreneurship is not for the lighthearted.
Exactly. This is not a... one and done in 12 months type deal. This is we're going to be solving this problem for many decades, but we get to do it. And that's the way I look at it. You know, most people don't have the opportunity to step up and solve problems. We do, and we've taken that step. So
pretty exciting. Well, and it makes it easier to work, right? If there's a why. This isn't just about the money.
There is no work. It's what we do.
Yes.
I'm totally with you. And I'm very excited for the future. And I look forward to continuing this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what advice would you have? We'll wrap up here in just a minute, but I want from you just a perspective, being in this, doing a lot of research, diving in and figuring out, hey, maybe the paper industry isn't right where you fit, or it's not ready for you know, expansion. We need to have a little bit of time before we can really scale. Give some advice to myself and or anybody else that's in this space, you know, about the journey and about getting into either hemp and or carbon. You said education.
Yeah. Persistence is the probably right next to education, because there are doors and stumbling blocks and trap doors and claymores, and it's very challenging, especially in the hemp space, to navigate the actual folks who are doing things and the folks who are very good at talking about doing things. And if I'm going to be blunt, I felt like I at some points was part of the problem. You know, I felt like I wasn't as productive in advancing the industrial hemp conversation as maybe I could have been. So, you know, this isn't a mea culpa, if you will. This is a, you guys, now that CBD is, I think, finally crashing, have the chance to take the initiative on the industrial side and say, and get with farmers and sit down with them knee to knee and say, look, I understand where you have been misled before. Here's the true value out of what this crop offers as compared to your government subsidized soy or corn or wheat or sorghum, although wheat we probably should be planting more of given what's going on in Ukraine, but that's a whole other thing. Demonstrating the value add through legitimate products, through folks who actually believe in what we're trying to do. So I'm very hopeful that in the next 5 years, there's going to be a boom in planting in terms of acreage. Not seeing it this year, but again, that's, I'd love to be proven wrong. And I will come back and be a part of the hemp industry on a tertiary side. So we're keeping this ball rolling. I transferred to NanoCreed basically as an immediacy thing. We don't have time to wait in terms of the problems being created via our inaction from climate change. So,
what I've seen even, right, is, and with all entrepreneurs, I've had multiple entrepreneurs advise me or give me advice, you know, and mentor me and say, like, understanding your why, because during the hard times, you've got to refer back to why you're doing this, right? And your why of making a difference with climate change has not changed, right? It's your method to get to that has changed or shifted a little bit. And so I think that that's really important when we look at entrepreneurship. You were looking to solve the problem, you know, through an avenue of, you know, your knowledge and experience in the paper space, and now have stumbled on or come across this other opportunity that happens to be equal or better to the solution, right, that you're providing, and a faster avenue to create it. And so I don't discredit that you shifted or left. It's that you're still going after the why of making change. And really, a lot of the people in the hemp industry, especially the industrial applications, are after the same thing, right? This climate change and opportunity and localizing supply chain. So there's a number of solutions that we're all coming up with. And yeah, so yeah. My advice too is always like the grit, don't give up. Just like Buzz said, never give up, never give in, you know?
Yeah, there's I'm a big reader, so I will throw some books out for your
Please.
For your audience.
I love these.
So right now I am reading what's called the Sustainability Scorecard. It's by, and I apologize if I bungle the author's name, but Urvashi Bhatnagar. This is the holistic closed loop economy thinking that we're talking about and trying to achieve long term. Okay. And then in terms of, you know, how to be a better you in terms of an entrepreneur, I think probably the best book that I read recently. Give me one second while I find it.
I'm going to throw one out there. You should read is Atomic Habits. I don't know if you've read that.
No, I haven't. But I definitely will, because I've heard good things about that book.
It's so good.
I finished this one. It's really good. It's called Ditch the Pitch. Okay. Let me pull up the author here. It's by Stephen Yastro. So it really speaks to the art of getting back to knowing your why. When you know your why, there is no pitch. There's just your speaking about a problem and your particular avenue of solution.
Love it. Danny just asked, what was the name of the book? And the few books that we've shouted out are Sustainability Scorecard, Ditch the Pitch, and Atomic Habit. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm very excited for, like I said, the next 5 years. There's my plan and goal is to raise $5 million by the end of 2023 to scale. So there's going to be a first round, a pre-seed round before that ask. I'm very confident from the conversations that I've had that the zeitgeist from the VC and investor space is towards the carbon sequestration and environmental solution space and away from the newest Web 3.0 crypto NFT calendar app.
So are you on your carbon? Are you tracking carbon through blockchain?
I don't know. We're going to look into it.
Okay.
Truth be told, there's every time someone talks to me about blockchain, the less I understand about it. So we'll have to investigate that.
Linking up with a key partner, right? Like Julie Lerner, when we talk about these other stakeholders that are going to be key to your growth, it would be, in my opinion, someone like her or a platform like hers that has that depth and knowledge of the trade and the, you know, credits. It's pretty cool. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's been watching her growth and that space, and it's very reassuring to see the normalization of carbon accounting just in the general conversations with the lay public.
Yeah. Well, if there's anything that we can do, please let's stay in touch. I would love to connect next time I'm in Colorado. Are you going to be at any of the events coming up, like Southern Hemp Expo? And I know you've kind of moved away from hemp for a minute, but I'm hoping I can connect with you. Or will you be at NoCo?
Yeah. I will try and be at NoCo next year. Yeah, in terms of Southern Hemp Expo this year, that's probably going to be a no, just in terms of trying to get that minimum viable product
totally
really up and running. But yeah, in terms of on the sideline cheerleader, you have no bigger cheerleader than me. So.
Oh, you're so awesome. Okay, well, let's stay in touch. And if there's anything I can do to help, please don't hesitate to reach out. If anybody that's listening has any questions or have heard anything today, please like, share, comment. Our goal is to get information out there. Just like Sean said, the education piece is key, and knowledge about these alternative resources and products and where to connect and how to scale or build partnerships. So please share, like I said, comment. If you need help with anything, don't hesitate to reach out to either of us. We're happy to educate, you know, point you in the right direction. And thank you so much for our listeners. Shout out to Michelle. She's fabulous. If you guys don't know her in this industry, she's incredibly connected. She's a wealth of knowledge, great resource, and beautiful soul. So reach out to her. Other than that, you guys have a fabulous weekend. Oh, fabulous day. I guess it's only Wednesday. We do have another interview tomorrow. I'm actually excited about also Patrick Itagi with the National Industrial Hemp Council is coming on to hit a couple of topics that they've been, things that they've been working on, different projects, as well as their event that they have coming up. You know, we talked a little bit about National Industrial Hemp Council, both last year and this year have put together some incredible events. They've got a great lineup of speakers and people attending. So I encourage you guys to get involved there. And then again, let me know if you have any questions. Other than that, awesome. Shane, Sean, anything else you want to share before we log off?
Make today the best day possible.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. See you later.
Thank you. See you. Bye.